sights to show you.
So can you pray for money?
Can you pray for this? Can you pray for that?
Yeah, yeah. Can you fix everything on your faith? Because mine will not work.
my faith, like how everything works, just doesn't really work like that.
I maxed it out like many Sundays ago. But I just stopped.
Yeah. And speaking of faith,
that's a really good transition.
That's a huge theme that I didn't realize was a theme the first time around. We are talking about 2002 Signs. This is the Horrible People's Podcast.
Hey, everybody. By the way, that conversation was very organic.
Yeah.
So it led into the theme really well.
That's why I hit record when I did.
You
I was
did.
Just like, this is a perfect time. I just need to get the last bit of this conversation.
Someone's been podcasting for almost a year.
I know. So welcome everyone to the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me as always, Anthony Fuentes. He's tired. He's always tired. He has coffee. I'm over caffeinated. Let's do this.
Oh, yeah. This is like the opposite of misery. Huh? We always have these episodes where we flip back and forth. One day.
Yeah.
One day, it's the weekday episodes. Weekend episodes, we kill it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But life. But I'll get it.
Yeah. It's okay. We hung out on Saturday, which was probably.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man.
But anyway, today we are talking about Signs from 2002. Of course, this is iconic in its own right.
Yeah.
Some people hate it. Some people love it.
It's super divisive. It's like really, like all the YouTube videos I watched, there was just half and half. People were like, well, I like Signs. And the other people were just like, the Signs fucking sucks. How dare you?
Yeah.
What's wrong with your eyes?
Which is tragic because Signs is such a great place in my childhood and in my heart. And we'll get into
my own experiences with it.
But let's just dive right in with the IMDb synopsis.
All right.
A family living on a farm finds mysterious crop circles in their fields, which suggests something more frightening to come.
That's pretty basic.
That is the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I was saying they didn't mention anything of the theme going on in there, which drives the whole film.
Well, yeah, and I think that's kind of the point, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not to scare people off with, like, by the way, faith discussion.
Yeah, there's a huge undercurrent of religion, and we'll get into why right now, because this movie, the main character, Mel Gibson, plays Reverend Graham Hess.
Former Reverend for most of the movie,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he still holds, I think he holds the title unless he totally, like, goes through the whole process of being, like...
Like, excommunicated and shit.
Yeah, excommunicated and everything. But, so you have Mel Gibson, who plays the aforementioned Reverend Graham Hess, Joaquin Phoenix as Merrill Hess, Rory Culkin as Morgan Hess, Abigail Breslin as Bo Hess, Cherry Jones as Officer Paskey, and M. Night Shyamalan in his own film as Ray Reddy.
I thought that said Ray Daddy.
I don't like it.
He visits him, he just walks into his home with fucking S&M gear everywhere.
I don't like it.
It's like I captured one of them. He's in the sling.
he's tied up with like beautiful like rope work, like suspended from like the ceiling.
His arms are all like moving. Just the finger parts is just like.
And no, I hate it. Oh no, I don't want
he
it.
He puts the git mask on him.
I don't like it. I don't want it.
Oh, good old Ray Daddy. Directed by Ray Daddy, of course.
I hate this. No. This movie was written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. This was his third feature film. It was released on August 2nd, 2002.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can compute things back then. Wow.
Yeah. I was like a person.
Yeah, like a real person with like that had fucked up enough things that it still lasts with me now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Its budget estimated was at $72 million, and its opening weekend, it opened to about $60 million, and its gross USA budget was almost $228 million, and cumulative worldwide gross, $408,274,000. or $47,917.
She's so good at that. Jesus. yeah, this thing was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I watched it in theaters as a youngin', it was fucking gigantic.
I don't think I included this, so I will, you know, throw it in here now. This is actually M. Night Shyamalan's most profitable film.
That makes sense. That makes total
more
sense.
More so than The Sixth Sense, more so than Unbreakable, like, mm-hmm. more, like, this is it.
Dude.
And more so than The Village, which is the next film you would do after this.
Oh, man. And people were riding on that one, but one day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
also a very divisive film.
Much more, I feel like much more divisive than Signs. Yeah. Signs has, like, generally favorable reception amongst yeah. people with, like, some real loud, like, well, detractors.
I think the younger you are,
mm-hmm.
I think the more favorable you are, like, the more can't
yeah,
like,
no,
you
with
know?
Signs, with that signs. Makes, or, like me, just in a constant state of arrested development.
Well, I mean, in your case, you were still in high school.
Yeah, no, beginning of high school. Yeah,
yeah, you were
right.
still in high school when this movie came out, so mm-hmm. you're still young. You were still
yeah,
a kid.
That's true. Still malleable. Yeah.
So I think, and I mean, for me, I was 7.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Big difference. Yeah. And then by the time The Village came, I was a cynical piece of shit high schooler, and so. That's when I was just like, "Fuck Shyamalan and
yeah,
me."
No. So this was my first Shyamalan movie, I think. Yeah.
It's a good starter.
It's a good one. But yeah. it also, I mean, we'll get into it later. But for me, I think that why this is so much more divisive, or so much less divisive than The Village,
mm-hmm.
I think this one is more sci-fi.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So it's, and then also, if you're younger, the religious,
mm-hmm.
like, sort of aspects kind of go over your head. Like, it's kind of like something you notice, but it's yeah. not like a core tenet of the film.
You're not getting offended by the theme.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a kid, you're like, oh, who gives a shit? He's religious. Yeah. I get it.
You're not some college edgelord that's just like, my God.
Yeah.
They didn't have faith at the end? Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, I used his name.
But, yeah, so that is the beginning sort of, I don't know, stats of the film.
Yeah, yeah, where we stand slightly. But as always, sticking with our theme, we got to go into a little bit about what's going on with aliens now.
Yeah.
So obviously aliens are a big tenet of film. Sci-fi is pretty much the basis for most sci-fi.
Yeah.
With the exception of, you know, early sci-fi like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which had zombie in it, technically. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Zombie before the word. Zombie
before the word.
Or
yeah.
Zombie with an I.
Yeah, exactly. Reanimated corpse.
Uh-huh.
But this is a zombies versus aliens month. So let's dive in a little bit about the history of aliens with the film genre. So before we go into the story of Signs, I wanted to get into a brief history of alien invasion genre as it is relevant to our theme. Plus, aliens are cool as fuck, by the way. Just so you know, they're pretty badass.
I fucking love aliens.
I do. I really like them, too. See, that's the thing. With most alien movies, they go between action and sci-fi. Or action and, like, horror.
And,
like, in between.
Yeah. And then sci-fi is the bridge
it's the
between
bridge.
The two, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly. But the alien invasion, or space invasion, is a common feature in science fiction or horror stories and film, in which extraterrestrials invade the Earth either to examine and supplant human life, enslave
exterminate.
It. Exterminate.
Not examine.
Oh, exterminate. Oh, in my mind, see, I went straight with the happy aliens.
Yeah, like, we just want to, like, probe your asshole.
Yeah,
like,
okay, so yeah, let's see, my earliest alien was E.T. So,
okay.
In my mind, I'm examine. No, exterminate, okay. Either
they want to kill you.
They want to kill, exterminate and supplant human life, enslave it under an intense state, harvest people for food, steal the planet's resources, or destroy the planet altogether, or most commonly some combination of all this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or sometimes examine, you know, E.T. and, like, those...
I never saw E.T.
There was that and the Strange Encounters of the Third Kind. All Spielberg. Spielberg was the only happy one.
The Encounters of... Yeah, the Strange Encounters...
Close Encounters.
Close Encounters, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind actually... The trailer scared the fuck out of me. I never saw it because the trailer itself, I was like, oh, God.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty wholesome for the most part.
Is it?
I wouldn't say wholesome, but, like, it's much more of a Spielberg-y, like, happy alien movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, also, from... So, as a child, I was a little Morgan Hess. Like, I was, like, a little obsessive alien book reader.
Oh.
So, I knew the scale of, like... what Close Encounters were.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was just like, they're making a movie about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I can't do it. And I just saw the trailer and I was like, nope.
Like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I can see a little Morgan Hess. That makes sense.
Well, I'll go. I'll get into it when we get to the movie. But there's a lot of connections between me and Morgan.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. But the alien invasion can be tracked back most notably, and this is something I researched a lot in AP history as a high school ute, to The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells in 1897, actually. So while the invasion trope was common before this, the novel really began to make people pay attention. But as an aside, the reason why I actually got into the War of the Worlds thing back in the day is because Orson Welles started his career off doing a radio broadcast about War of the Worlds. Have you heard about that before?
Of course. Like, the classic, like, they did the radio broadcast of it, and it caused mass hysteria.
It caused mass hysteria, and everybody freaked the fuck out.
One of my favorite stories, because I just think that's such a great indication of how terrifying alien invasions can be to people.
Right, and how stupid lots of people are. Like, you think we have all these problems in the world now. Remember, lots of dumb folks. Yeah, lots of just bloodthirsty, like, no, we just kill everybody.
Well, I loved it because it also, I made that connection between that and one of my other favorite alien films, which is Without Warning, which I've mentioned before on this podcast, which is a fake news broadcast. Mm-hmm. And if you watch it, and of course, if you watched it in, like, the early 90s when it actually came out, it looked like a news broadcast. And that's what I loved about it.
Yeah,
it seemed so authentic.
Yeah.
And it just, like, in my tiny little brain, like, if I just, like, imagined hard enough, I could pretend it was real.
Oh my gosh, that's cool though, because your little mind can see the same.
Oh, yeah.
It looks the same.
Yeah.
So in your mind, you're like, so how far can they take this?
Yeah, and yeah. It was just so cool, and just, like, how it ends, and it's just, like, oh, so good. You need to watch it.
Yes, yes, Without Warning.
Without
okay.
Warning.
We'll keep that one.
We're gonna have to watch it at some point.
In there somewhere.
It's just, so fucking good.
We got plenty more episodes of plenty more aliens to insert at some point. I'm down. I'm very down. The invasion scenario has been used as an allegory for a protest against military hegemony and the societal ills of the time. This would come up time and time again. As aliens come in and out of popularity, it is usually can be reflected to the political unrest going on, at least from the American side of things, which is absolutely true.
And I wanted to mention this up top for sure. Anytime we're talking about the history of, like, alien invasion films or anything like that, mostly from my perspective and from the history perspective, it's going to be from an American perspective.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone has any resources for, like, a more, like, holistic, like, worldwide view of alien invasion horror films, please let me know, because all of these are very, like, American centric, and it gets kind of repetitive, but
it's what we know. We're Americans,
right? Happy 4th of July. If you are interested in that kind of thing, there is a great documentary called Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue, which is a documentary that goes through kind of each decade and why the alien, and there's a whole little section about why alien invasion films were as scary as they were. And we're going to kind of gloss over it, but if you want a little bit more in-depth and some more interviews, there is not a history of horror episode on aliens, so that's what I have to reference for this.
You got to go aside. Source for that.
Well, it's another documentary, and I love my horror documentaries. So that's my recommendation for this particular episode.
Really? Okay, cool. I think you recommended that to me before, probably on this podcast.
I have
actually.
Multiple times. Yeah, it's a great documentary.
Wait, it's on Amazon?
It used to be on Hulu.
Oh, wait. I remember I wanted to watch it, and it was fucking gone.
Yeah, it used to be on Hulu. I don't know where it is anymore.
I sent you a text of tear emojis.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Poor Anthony.
Oh my god. Okay, I gotta actually get on the Eli Roth shit though. That's the next one.
Yeah.
But the intensity and maliciousness of alien invasions tend to vary based on the political climate when the specific alien content is being produced. Arguably, the beginning of horror and alien invasion films becoming more intertwined can be sourced back to the 1950s, which is what I didn't want to interlude because I didn't read ahead. I'm like, I know Alex did her shit, so yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about this right here, which is a big deal.
Yeah. I did the homework. Mm-hmm. I did the reading.
Yeah, this is, remember, zombies versus aliens. We gotta get deep in this bitch. alien invasion was a common metaphor in the United States science fiction during the Cold War. illustrating the fears of foreign, you know, Soviet Union, occupation and nuclear devastation of the American people. Examples of these stories include the short story, The Liberation of Earth, from 1950 by William Ten, and the film Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956, which is the basis for a lot of alien movies going forward after
Definitely. That. Definitely. Yeah. It is a baseline, like, pretty much for most alien films, this is it. Like, mm-hmm. this is what people use as their inspiration.
Yeah, this and War of the Worlds, just taking scenes from each of them and then amalgamating what we have most of the time. Mm-hmm. We somehow got Independence Day out of all that, which is really nice. But it took the post...
Apparently Independence Day is very divisive as well. Okay. Which, I just think that, like, there is people who like Independence Day and people who are wrong.
Yeah, that's the exact statements I was going to make. They're wrong.
They are wrong. They're not, Independence Day is fucking amazing. I was reading an article that I was actually using for this episode, and someone made, like, a nasty side comment about how awful Independence Day was, and I had to edit it. Because I was just like, I'm not, there is no shade towards Independence Day in this episode. We are a pro-Independence Day podcast.
Exactly. Don't take yourselves too seriously, guys. Sometimes cheese is okay. Lots of cheese is okay
good.
For you.
This is good cheese.
Yes.
Which, are you going to be watching Independence Day?
Watch it every freaking year.
I know, but every 4th of July.
Oh, if it's, I don't have regular TV. I'll find it.
I need to watch it, because like... Oh my God. It's a tradition. You gotta watch Independence Day.
I do have that giant fucking screen. That would be interesting. Yeah. But I have 4th of July shit, so, you know, maybe during the weekend. But it took the post-war paranoia of the Cold War to usher in a golden age of sci-fi, and with it, a rash of alien invasion movies. These invasions came in many forms, and the nature of alien invasions changed notably as the 50s wore on. So by the 60s, Area 51, by the 60s, the era of alien invasion movie appeared to be over. 50s anxieties of communist invasion were replaced by new fears of nuclear war, which manifested themselves in such films as Failsafe and Stanley Kubrick's classic Dr. Strangelove, which, have you seen that before? Mm-mm. It's very nuclear satire.
I'm sure.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
But, you know, what if I ever appeared to be a fan?
Of Kubrick, right. I forget. Why did I even mention it? Why
did you ask
me? I don't even know.
You're just... asking me to paint a target on my own back.
As a felt Kubrick fan, it's fine. We see looks in America, y'all can have different interests and still get along. This is how things are.
He in no way is glaring at me or is holding me against my will.
I'm not clutching my tablet and just like
in rage. No. He's not gonna slash my tires later.
The decades that followed, filmmakers returned to the theme of alien invasion, but only sporadically, really. Some, such as Philip Kaufman's satirical updating of Invasion of the Body Snatchers in 1978, were brilliant. Others, like Roland Emmerich's expensive Independence Day, were more likely an experiment with special effects, but made a monumental impact on alien invasion films and pop culture nonetheless. So, that's a little brief history right there. As again, same thing with the zombies we're gonna gloss over on aliens, and you know, because this isn't one of the early things, so we're gonna have a lot more to talk about, obviously.
So I think we'll probably save a more in-depth history for something like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, when we go classic. Oh, we can go deep on that.
Yeah,
one.
We can do a little bit more of an in-depth, you know,
or
history.
Or we can cover the radio show for War of the
Worlds.
Yeah,
that would be cool,
get
too.
To hear some Orson Welles. Who knows?
I honestly listened to a radio, I forget what it was. It wasn't Rear Window. But I've listened to radio, like, shows before. They're fucking fascinating.
They're awesome.
They're very intriguing. Yeah. Even if, like, there is nothing to watch. Like, if you get super stoned and just listen, it's very fun.
Do you listen to, like, more classic ones with, like, that old 1940s, like, oh my God.
It's so fun.
Imagine, like, that 1940s, like, way of approaching radio shows, but they do something real dark, like, fucking Seven.
Ask
what's in the box.
I know, right? God, okay. I want to Google it, but it's like this radio. Fuck, hold on. I gotta Google it now.
Okay, guys, taking a break. I sparked something inside there. We will come back when she learned her shit. Oh, that's some furious typing right there.
Haha! Fuck you guys.
You found it? What is it?
Yes. Okay, so it is this is the film version of it, but what I'm thinking of is Sorry, Wrong Number.
Never heard of it.
Okay, hold on. So it is a the radio play. So so it's a play by Lucille Fletcher, and it originally aired as a suspense radio program in 1943.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a one-woman show where basically the whole synopsis is the story of a woman who overhears a murder plot.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I can dig that.
On the phone. But she's a little, like, nervous woman, so she just keeps calling, and it's just, like, very nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the whole thing. It was, like, 30 minutes, I think.
That's it?
The par for the time, I think. Fucking fascinating.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to listen to that, actually. That sounds fun as fuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was great.
Okay, cool. Well, back... Aliens, guys.
Sorry. No. But, like, the radio show thing. It's fine.
Radio show. No, that's a good transition. I like it. You're right. Because that's something I'm interested in now.
Yeah, you're welcome. But, anyway...
Special treat for the audience. You get a little extra murder-based radio play from the 1940s.
I don't know. That sounds kind of fun, right?
That's right. But you know what also is kind of fun? Transition here. Some M. Night Shyamalan history, huh?
Hell yeah.
Let's do it. A little bit.
So, of course, there I did not write an extensive M. Night Shyamalan history because we will be saving that.
Mm-hmm. For one day.
For one day when we inevitably cover The Sixth Sense, that is his first film.
The big one, yeah. Which we touched upon briefly during the Blair Witch Project podcast.
Very, very briefly because it just released the same...
Same time. Yeah.
So, following up M. Night Shyamalan's 1999 hit, The Sixth Sense, and the 2000 follow-up, Unbreakable, Signs was intended to be a story that was applicable to whoever watched it. Shyamalan felt that his previous films had been isolating and were too macro in focus.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
He said he wanted to write something that had, quote, global significance and a, quote, universal message, but also worked as a fun, scary, quote, roller coaster ride.
Hmm. It was pretty roller coastery.
It was. I'll it had it some ups and downs, for sure.
Yeah.
Signs also does something that many alien invasion films will do. Take a typical American family and show the alien invasion through their eyes and their eyes only. Throughout the film, we don't get much insight into what's going on outside of their familial circle.
And that is a smart move, to be honest with
you. I think that's so great. Brilliant. Because, like, honestly, if you go too out of it, like the War of the Worlds with, like, Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little bit more focused, but even then, it was still a little bit too...
Too big. Yeah.
Or even something like Independence Day. It's too... Because you have too many storylines going
exactly.
on.
I mean, Independence Day is big with a purpose. You really can't go bigger than that. Like, you can, but you're not on Earth anymore.
Well, okay, if you go much bigger than that, you get Independence Day 2.
Ugh, which we'll never cover because we've said this before.
I was so disappointed.
Dude, that hurt.
I have never been so let down by a franchise in my life.
And theaters, too. I was like, what the fuck did I just pay for?
I know. I did not watch it in theaters because everyone was just like, don't do it.
I'm going to cry right now. This is fucking horrible.
I can see the tears in his eyes.
No,
he's
gonna
burst into tears.
I got to learn about Shyamalan. I'm done with that. I can't even think about that.
But here is where we get a lot of the inspiration for the film. Besides the real-life phenomenon of unexplained crop circles, Shyamalan took direct inspiration from classic sci-fi and horror films such as The Birds, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like we mentioned before, and Night of the Living Dead, which Night of the Living Dead, of course, is, it has that direct connection to focusing on a single unit, in a farmhouse,
That's true. No, there's a lot of third act revolves around that.
There's a lot of parallels. Like, I can see some of the birds in there, some of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's very cool. But casting the film was a unique endeavor, as most of the film revolves around the Hess family. So for Shyamalan, the casting had to be spot on. He couldn't fuck this up.
No. One bad Hess would have fucked the whole thing up.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
So originally, Shyamalan wanted to cast an older man to play the main character, Reverend Graham Hess. And he had approached both Clint Eastwood and Paul Newman to star, and both of them turned his ass down.
Ugh. Oh, I can see... Actually, Eastwood, like, doing it, like, nah.
I couldn't even... Could you imagine Paul Newman in this role?
No.
I don't want it.
I can't imagine anybody else, to be honest. No.
Well, and yeah, we'll get into it later, but seeing this as a child before Mel Gibson went off of his freaking...
This
was before, like, the Mel Gibson controversy. Mm-hmm. So, seeing it as a kid, I was just like, okay, he's just an actor.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of tainted by, like, his past transgressions.
And this is probably in the prime of his, like, I'm invincible and can say whatever I want and do anything I want era.
This is right... Because, like, right after this, he went on to direct. And this is right before he went on to, like, direct, like, Apocalypto.
Mm.
So
okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Wow.
So Johnny Depp was even approached to play the role, but he also declined. Imagine Johnny Depp in this role.
I also don't want it.
Like, Mel Gibson encapsulates, like, the perfect, like he's old enough and mm-hmm. he looks just reverendy enough and just, like, farm town enough that like I think he does the part justice.
Johnny Depp and Joaquin Phoenix together would have just been puffing chest trying to get screen time right there.
Mel Gibson got the role eventually, and then after he read the entire script, in one sitting, basically calling it a page turner. He was so excited about the script. He was into it.
Dude, that I would be too. Honestly, the way this film was paced,
yeah,
it would make a good on-screen or on-page read,
yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But actually, this is very interesting, but Mark Ruffalo was originally cast as Meryl, Graham's brother.
Huh.
Yeah, but shortly after the movie went into production, he dreamed he contracted a brain tumor during the shoot, which...
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty prophetic right there.
I know. Well, wait, it gets weirder.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun. The next day, he went to the doctor and found out he really did have a brain tumor, forcing him to drop out of the film and be replaced by Joaquin Phoenix.
Jeez.
The tumor, however, did end up being benign, but it did cost him his hearing in his left ear, and it nearly paralyzed his face. It took him about a year before he had recovered enough to act again.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Damn. That's fucked up.
So this is in 2002, so it took him about a year, so I'd say probably 2003, 2004, before he started acting again.
He's out of work for that long and has medical bills in America mm-hmm. as an actor?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck it. Okay, well, shit, we got Hulk. Hulk made it.
Well, yeah, he made it, and then, what, 4 years? 4 years later?
Mm-hmm.
4 or 5 years? Yeah, 4 years later, then he would be in the Avengers and his life would change forever.
Exactly. And I think, you know what, though? Mark Ruffalo would not have been bad as Meryl. He'd have been different, but he would have been fine.
Well, this was also mentioned, but Joaquin Phoenix and Mel Gibson have a 19-year age difference.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's kind of obvious that they seem, like, very, like, their age gap is kind mm-hmm. of obvious.
Yeah, it's pretty noticeable, yeah.
And I think having Mark Ruffalo and Mel Gibson, because they have similar face shapes...
Oh, they do, huh?
It would have been a lot more obvious that they were brothers, because the first time I watched the film when I was very, very young, I thought Joaquin Phoenix was the wife's brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I thought Meryl was his brother-in-law.
Oh, I can totally see that. That makes sense.
That's what I thought.
You know, Joaquin Phoenix does look a little older than he gives off, though. So
that's true.
The gap is a little closer.
They kind of aged him, I think, a little bit. Like,
yeah.
They gave him some dark under eye circles and stuff in the film, and, like, everyone looked terrified half the time. So.
Yeah, that's true. Anguish helps.
The anguish definitely ages you. But also, at Abigail Breslin's audition, there was a dog who quickly became attached to the 5-year-old and tried to leave with her. Like the character, the dog's name was Bo. And this became something of a sign to Abigail Breslin.
Aww.
This film would also become Breslin's feature film debut.
Wait, what else? Was she in Zombieland?
She was in Zombieland. She was also in Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay, wow. This is
the
first one, huh?
Yeah, she went immediately, I think, from this to Little Miss Sunshine. Because there's very little discrepancy. Because I think Little Miss Sunshine came out in, like, 2003?
Okay. Holy shit, dude. This is, like, she did pretty good. Like,
yeah.
For 5 years old.
Yeah.
My God.
She was 5 in this.
Jeez, here I am, just a poor 32-year-old. Fucking A.
Yeah. So, Shyamalan cast himself as Ray Reddy, the remorseful driver responsible for the accident that killed Mrs. Hess, in order to make the film feel even more personal to himself. Funnily enough, Gibson didn't know he'd be playing the scene opposite Shyamalan until just before cameras rolled and he showed up on set that day.
Oh, that must have been really surprising.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, really, really. I would bet so, because I saw some behind-the-scenes footage and Shyamalan's, like, pretty direct with his notes.
Yeah.
So going from that to just, like, okay, now we're gonna play against each other. I'm sure Gibson's just like, oh. Oh, that's funny. But as always, guys, it's time to learn how this movie got made.
Hell yeah.
Let's fucking do it. So
now that we're cast. There was very little on Rory Culkin. I think they just kind of ushered him in there.
Yeah. Oh, he's a Culkin. He wants a part.
My final fun fact. 3 out of the 4 Hess members all are siblings of famous actors.
What, really? Oh, right. Rory Culkin.
Is Macaulay Culkin.
Mm-hmm. Joaquin Phoenix, River Phoenix.
And then Abigail Breslin has an older brother who's also an actor.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. All right. Good to know. That's it. That's a lot of insider favors on this one. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this Rory Culkin still continued to go on into acting after this, which is cool.
I actually like Rory Culkin.
I really like Rory Culkin. I think he's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. He also did Lords of Chaos, which I thought was really cool.
And Scream 4. Which is actually a pretty good fucking movie in my eyes.
I
like Scream also. But, of course, now we're going to go into the making of this film.
Yeah.
So, Ray Daddy, a.k.a. M. Night
Stop
Shyamalan.
It. No, I hate it. Ray this Daddy. Is awful.
I still
Stop
have
it.
That image of...
I don't like it. I don't want it. You know you're just feeding all the people out there who want to fuck aliens,
yeah,
right?
It's sound. It's, they're
no,
fine.
They all want to fuck aliens, and they're envisioning a fucking alien hanging from the ceiling tied up with these beautiful fucking knots.
Oh my god, just imagine though how Ray Daddy caught him.
Like, yeah, I don't. That would, I don't. No, because just, they probably, because you know what Ray Daddy has? Probably huge fucking cages.
Yeah.
Like, probably lured them in there with some god knows what.
Nah, dude, it was like some freaking Rube Goldberg thing. Like, he slips on some lube on the floor and it's just Scooby-Doo like, into the cage.
You thought this out a little too much.
I thought that right now. Improv, baby. Anyways, M. Night Shyamalan, he wrote the script over a period of 6 months. In real life, crop circles usually appear in wheat fields, but Shyamalan thought corn would be scarier because it's much taller and harder to flatten. Which,
you know, corn is the scariest of all the crops.
It is. Corn is a freaky-ass crop. I will agree with that.
Mainly because of Children of the Corn.
Yeah. Ooh, I want to cover that one day.
I love
Ooh,
Children of the Corn.
That first one's
it's
good.
It's creepy as
yeah.
fuck.
But then also, like, every time even I go through a cornfield.
Also
like,
a Stephen King.
Also Stephen King, that's right. But in went to college in Davis, if we'd pass by the fields. It's daytime, there's lots of cars, but I'm still creeped out.
Did I tell you the time I got lost in a cornfield?
No. What happened?
So, when I was about 10, I lived in Central California.
Mm-hmm. Lots of cornfields around there. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And around Halloween time, there was like a little festival and everything, and everyone was like, yay, festival, whatever.
Wait, you may have told me this.
Mm-hmm. I think
I vaguely remember.
I told you this at work. I haven't told our wonderful listeners the story. So, buckle in. So, we were walking around, and the sun was starting to go down, and like, whatever, that's fine. My mom, we were passing this corn maze, and there was a kid's corn maze, and there was an adult corn maze. Which sounds really weird,
yeah.
But whatever. So my mom just lets us do the adult corn maze because she thinks it's small. Like, whatever. Like,
yeah, you're not
she
gonna...
does. She doesn't think it. This is a half mile, like, or it's basically like it's 2 miles across corn maze.
Jeez.
Or something ridiculous, like a mile across.
Fucking huge.
Yeah. It's a 2 mile across corn maze. Or 1 mile. I don't even remember. I was 10. I was terrified. The sun was going down. I was, like, lost.
Oh, no.
My twin brother and I were in this corn maze, wandering around, just like, what, where, when, well, the sun is going down. I don't know how to get out of here. And finally, we want you, because basically you couldn't get out until you made it to the center.
Uh-huh.
And then you could follow this path to get out.
Okay.
And basically, I was so worried because my mom was just like, go through it quickly because we need to go home.
Oh, no. Oh.
And it took forever. And I was just like, this is not fun anymore. I really need to get out.
And my mom's going to be mad at me.
And my mom is going to fucking kill me. And my dad, who listens to this podcast, he's going to message me about this and be like, I remember this. And here is some, you know, here's some additional facts that you don't remember because you were 10 and terrified. Okay, now that Anthony's done torturing
me. If you hear an abrupt cut, yeah, that was some messed up jokes in there.
Good fucking God. Anyway, so we make it out of the cornfield. My mom is just like, what the fuck happened? And then we were just like, it's a huge fucking cornfield. Yeah. And basically now jokes are made at all of our expenses. And now we fondly recall the time we all got lost in the cornfield. But
when you were briefing the children of the corn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now... We laugh, but at the time, it was fucking terrifying.
Oh my God, no, that's scary as shit, dude. That's scary.
Yeah, I got lost in the cornfield, man.
That's little kid anxiety, too. You don't know what the world is like, so you're like, there could be monsters, there could be...
Someone could reach out of... Because also, it was Halloween, and I loved being scared, so I wasn't sure if there actually were people, like, in costume, walking around the maze, like, scaring people. Mm-hmm. I wanted there to be, but once I realized I was lost, I didn't want there to be.
No.
But I was still kind of, like, thinking, what if there are? But there wasn't.
Yeah, I remember you telling me this before. It was fucking horrifying.
Man.
Would not want to live that. Okay.
No.
But when it came to the actual mazes for this film, in order to accomplish the effect, they actually utilized a special watering technique that makes the corn grow significantly faster in order to keep up with the shooting schedule.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, nice. I'm sure nobody got lost in there.
No, I'm sure it was fine.
The professional, no, I'm sure fucking Abigail Breslin just...
She's five. I'm sure someone was keeping track.
Right?
Keeping her on a leash or something.
One of those little leashes.
Hey, I was kept on a leash.
Did they leave you on a leash?
Not like when I was 10, but like, there were two of us.
Okay, no, twins. Twins.
I am a twin.
That makes sense. That makes more sense.
My mom was 23 when she had me.
Okay, interesting.
And there were two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And my twin and I were kind of like magnets. We would just run in opposite directions.
And then the leash would help you come back?
Yep. Just tie us together.
Just like the Wild Wild West. Okay, all right, cool. Did
awful.
You watch that? Yeah,
I loved Wild Wild West.
I know you like it, but it's a really bad movie.
No, but when I watched it, I was like...
Oh,
I was really tiny, so I didn't know what good movies were.
No, I think that's when I was starting to come into the age of just like, wait a minute, this might not be good. Like that's like my mind started not accepting movies as movies anymore.
No, I had it on VHS, and I was like, oh, this is fun, because I was just like, because I don't like Westerns, but it was kind of sci-fi-y.
I can see you rapping to the Will Smith song. A little bit.
Wild Wild West. No, that and Men in Black.
Oh my God. Okay, Men in Black was the shit.
Yeah, that. Well, I mean, similar. Basically the same movie.
Mm-hmm. Wait, they're both directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, aren't they?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I was seven.
We'll have to look this up later.
But basically, they're the same movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, they definitely are. Oh my gosh. Anyways, all of the outside shots were on the cornfields, on location at Delaware Valley College outside of Philadelphia. The college was so impressed with the watering technique utilized to water the corn, they adopted it into their own curriculum. Jesus.
Yeah. They were just like, you guys are on to something.
You're like, so there are a couple brains over in Hollywood, huh? But the Victorian farmhouse scene in the film was a hollow set built for the movie. Shyamalan meant for it to represent America as a fortress. It was no coincidence that he had it painted with red, white, and blue trim.
Did you notice this?
No, I didn't really notice that. Yeah. No, okay.
It's like very faint, but it's definitely there.
Interesting subtle allegory there. Okay, uh-huh. Cool. Nice. No, that's awesome. The location of the film is credited as Bucks County, Pennsylvania in the film. All scenes shot on location were actually filmed in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Well, that's pretty nice. Production filmed the scenes in the bookstore and the pizza shop in Newton, Pennsylvania. Production shot the pharmacy scene in Mooresville, Pennsylvania. So this is a Pennsylvanian-ass motherfucking film.
I believe M. Night Shyamalan prefers to film in Pennsylvania, or at least around Philadelphia, because that's where he's from.
Okay, so he knows the area. He knows aesthetically what he's looking for when he's in there.
So I think it's also just like, for simplicity's sake, he prefers to film close to home.
Yeah, that's going to represent his hood, I would imagine, also. Nice. Okay, cool. The shoot started on September 12th, 2001. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cast and crew held a candlelight vigil to mark the previous day's terrorist attacks on New York and Washington. Then they shot the film's most heartbreaking scene when Graham talks to his dying wife for the last time.
Chills, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, that is just...
Isn't that intense?
That's a tragic week right there. Holy shit. And that would have been a Wednesday, right? Because September 11th was on a Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I was six.
I mean, I don't remember exactly the day and date, but I have watched videos and stuff. So, wow. Okay. Yeah. Bad week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it was set to be the first scene that they shot. It just happened that it just... That's just how it worked out.
Yeah.
Which, that just sucks. Like, way to get you in the fucking mood, right?
Yeah, and the scene itself is really goddamn tragic, so.
It's a great, watching it now as, like, an adult, mm-hmm. like, as a kid, I thought it was super sad, but watching it now as, like, an adult who has feelings.
Yeah, who has loved before.
Yeah, who's loved before, I'm just like.
Don't move the fucking car.
Like, I'm, like, weeping, and I'm just like, why am I crying? This is an alien movie.
Oh my gosh. Anyways, tragedy continued to strike. Shyamalan's grandfather actually passed away the day before the crew was set to do the scene in the movie where Graham and Ray finally have a discussion. In the scene, he had a picture of his grandfather and the photo of the candlelight vigil from the first day of shooting in his pocket. So, damn.
I know. I thought that was kind of, like, sweet.
Yeah. No. I'm obviously... you know what? And then he got his highest grossing movie off of the afterwards. So he's probably, like, doing you proud, Gramps. Yeah.
Well, I think he also kept a photo of his grandpa in, like, his pocket for the rest of the film.
Nice.
Which I thought was sweet.
Yeah. Dude, Shyamalan, he seems like a pretty stand-up guy sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. But speaking...
He doesn't seem like a bad guy.
No.
Unless he's...
I know he's got an ego, but, like, I mean, it's Hollywood. And he was hot shit, so, you know?
He's done a lot... I mean, if I directed and, like, did he write The Sixth Sense too?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. If I wrote and directed The Sixth Sense and Signs and mm-hmm. and The Village and freaking
yeah,
like all this shit, I would have an ego too. Like,
no. Yeah, he wrote and directed Hollywood hits in the hundreds of millions of dollars for most of his career. So, yeah. Guy earned a little bit, you know?
And also, he also did The Visit, so I'll...
I haven't seen The Visit yet.
I want to.
Yeah? I heard it was really good.
Me too.
Yeah, I heard it was really good, actually.
And I didn't know he did The Visit, so...
Oh, okay.
I'll have to check it out.
We'll have to check... One of these days, guys, if you want to hear about The Visit, we can do it. Let us know. Anyways, but speaking of that scene, the alien's hand scene sticking out below the pantry door was actually an animatronic prop, which... Pretty fucking cool, because it kind of...
It's very really realistic.
Yeah.
That's one of the... I mean, one of the... I mean, there's a couple other really, really scary scenes in this movie, but that was one of them where I was like, oh, God,
yeah.
Like, I don't like it.
Oh, my gosh. I agree. That was actually, a lot of the alien scenes are really suspensefully well fucking done.
Yeah.
But later, when the alien holds the unconscious Morgan, Rory Culkin, in its arms, the claw hand was used again. But the rest of the alien's body was added in later. Culkin lay suspended in a harness whose wires were digitally erased later on. That's pretty fucking cool.
This is very cool. However, I knew this fact going into seeing the movie, mm-hmm. and you can tell he's in a harness. Like, if you knew it going into it, you can kind of tell, because he's, like, you can tell that most, like, his weight is mm-hmm. suspended, like, around his torso.
Interesting. Okay.
Like, if you're looking for it, mm-hmm. you can see it, but if you hadn't been looking for it, I never would have guessed.
Well, I haven't noticed it in 17 years since it's been made. So, you know what? Good job, filmmakers.
I know.
Good job. But the composer James Newton Howard was asked to purposely reference classic film scores from similar genres, such as Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 1977, and Psycho, 1960, also episode 1 of the Horrible People's Podcast, and it's okay. We've grown a lot since then, guys.
We've grown a lot. I'm really sorry. I know it has the most listens, and I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, we were learning.
We've grown so much.
We have. And who knows, we might cover more stuff of a similar vein in the future. So look out. So the opening music and main three-note motif is strikingly similar. Probably a reference to the theme from Psycho and the theme of The Twilight Zone, which it totally fucking is.
Yeah.
Yeah, like really similar, but fuck, the soundtrack's amazing.
Oh,
the soundtrack's fucking amazing.
I think the soundtrack also got, like, significant, like, not, like, awards, but nods from critics, where mm-hmm. they were just like, good job.
No, dude, like, honestly, I'm astonished it didn't get awards. The soundtrack is fucking amazing.
It's really
I
good.
Really, really love it.
Great suspense. Like, a lot of the sound in this, mm-hmm. like, the sound design in this is also really great.
Well, see, speaking of, well, since we're on the subject right now, when I first saw this in theaters...
Oh, you saw it in theaters?
I saw it in theaters, but that opening with just the text, not all black, it was
with
white
the
with the sci-fi letters and that soundtrack, I was like, I'm in for some shit today. Oh my God. Like, that sells the mood right there.
You were like a sophomore in high school, too, when you saw this.
Yeah, I watched a lot of movies when I was younger. Like, a lot.
No, I just think that's so cool.
I may have the ticket still. I started collecting tickets around then. If I find it, I'll share it on the podcast at social media at some point. Yeah. But actually, the composer had also worked with Shyamalan on previous films and had even begun to score the film from the storyboards alone, actually. So these two actually gelled really well together.
And for those of you who don't know, that is super uncommon.
Yes.
You do not score the film before it's even...
You see a screen of something. Yeah. That's not usually how that happens.
Yeah. So that's very uncommon, and they just really understood each other.
Dude,
so
that's really cool. In Zen right there. Yeah. That's nice. But Shyamalan hated using CGI in general in any of his movies. But here, he had to add the aliens in post-production, unfortunately. So, despite their limited screen time, the creatures proved difficult to create. So, using motion capture, he had a tall, lithe actress.
Like, slithery.
Oh, I see. He had a tall, lithe actress play the alien as graceful and stealthy. But that turned out to not look scary enough. So, he replaced her with a burly male actor.
Who just stomps around and looks fucking terrified.
He's just like, I'm gonna poison your son!
But speaking of this CGI thing, all of the crop circles featured in the film are all done by hand. Or all done in real life.
Yeah, practical effects.
Yeah, they're all practical. Dude. Which is really cool. And I think that's really, like, speaks to the dedication of authenticity in the film.
Honestly, it shows because those crop circles look fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a crop circle in real life one day.
No, you get lost again. You're like, not again! Not again! Mom!
But I'm taller now.
Okay. But they do that special watering. Oh, that's funny. Okay. But the Brazilian video was actually shot in Miami. But the children were all Brazilians. Shyamalan shot the iconic sequence himself with a handheld camcorder. By the way, this scene is fucking terrifying.
This is, like, the scene.
It's the scene.
Like, out of everything else in the film, this is, like, it.
Dude, the theater. Okay, side note, the theater, when I saw it.
I didn't know you saw this in theater.
No, dude.
Give me your...
This scene, they fucking... Everybody screamed their asses off. It was fucking insane, because we all knew it was going to happen.
I love it.
Well, the thing is, it's so well directed, and you know with, what's the name of Joaquin Phoenix's character? I forgot.
Meryl.
When, because they keep showing back and forth, like, Meryl's like, you know, like, vomit those children. Like, he's trying to get shit ready.
Fucking funny.
But the whole theater is also wanting the kids to move and, like, see it. Because you don't see the aliens the whole time. You see silhouettes and stuff, but you don't see them.
Like, them.
Yeah. So everybody's like, come on.
And then you fucking see it.
No, the vibe was literally everybody's, like, on the edge of their fucking seat. And then the music and the children screaming and fucking Meryl just, like, losing his shit. The whole theater just popped off. Like, it was fucking awesome. I wish I could replicate that.
Hobby still my heart.
Oh, my gosh.
I wish.
Oh, my gosh.
Truly, like, one of the things that I wish I could have been older for is to see some of these, like, early 2000s films in theaters, because, like, I just didn't get to experience that because I was so young.
Yeah,
which sucks, but, you know.
You came in theater age when everybody was meta and just like, me, aren't these movies fucking whatever?
You know what, though? One of my first, like, really memorable movie experiences was seeing Lord of the Rings and the Two Towers.
Oh my god, that was the best. I saw that in theaters, too.
I saw it in theaters.
I would never...
And it was in 2002.
Yeah, same year as this, actually.
So, I was 7.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay, that one, I had never known that movies could be that large in scale.
I didn't know movies could be that long.
Yeah, okay, it was a very long movie, too. That was a long
one.
And
I was sitting there with my dad, terrified. I was scared shitless of the orcs.
Dude.
Like, they scared the fuck out of me.
And they invaded in droves.
Yeah, that's what... And, like, anytime they would close up on any of their faces, I was just like...
Dude. Oh, as a 7-year-old, that must have been fucking terrifying. Yeah, that's such an epic battle.
It was great, but I was 7.
Yeah. Oh,
so I don't remember a whole lot of it. I just remember, like, the battle sequence and being terrified.
I remember having seen battle sequences in films like Braveheart and like Phantom Menace and all that shit up until then. And it was always good, but it was always, like, still limited by technology. But Two Towers...
Phantom Menace was good.
...was, like, huge, and it looked real for most of the thing. So I lost my shit when I saw that. I was like, is this what movies are going to be like from now on? Is this what it's going to be like? And they just went back to CG. They went back to Phantom Menace. But it's fine. You know, it's okay. I got Game of Thrones did me some good battles like that, so I'm happy. I'm happy. Anyways, though, the film's finally made.
Yeah.
It's finally made and ready for release. Alex, what the fuck happened with this?
Yeah. Okay, so Signs hit theaters on July. Fuck.
It's July now, it's Alex.
I know. On August 2nd, 2002, to a pretty awesome. $60,117,080 its opening weekend. Thankfully, it went up against films like Full Frontal and Master of Disguise. Ugh. Both.
Jesus. I remember this era now. Yeah.
It overshadowed every other film released its opening weekend, but it had yet to recuperate its hefty $72 million price tag.
Yep.
So it was by far like the largest opening of that weekend, but it, you know, it still hadn't, you know, broken even yet.
I think at that time, 60 million was pretty epic too, because I know Hannibal released, I think, a little bit before that, or a little around it, but it made, I think, around this much money, and it was considered, like, almost a record breaker.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is a time when they weren't that big in terms of opening weekends.
This did really great. I just think, I was just like, it didn't break even, which I was just, like, concerned for them.
Dude, but Shyamalan movies had pretty hefty price tags.
Yeah.
They did. Like, fucking Sixth Sense was $40 million, and
really?
He was first
and that was
debut.
In 1999.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So it stayed in rotation for 27 weeks and closed on a total domestic gross of $227,966,634.
Okay, where's the extra, like, fucking, what is it now? Like, $34,000 they need?
Right.
Where was the audience for that just to put it up a little bit?
I know, but it's just one of those things where, like, they kept adding theaters and the demand kept growing. So I don't want to call it, like, a sleeper, but, like, it definitely grew. Like, people continued to see it, and it stayed in rotation for 27 weeks. It closed in February of 2003.
Damn, I think that's how Shyamalan's movies performed back then.
Yeah.
Like, because he had that name and quality up until this film. Then, then The Village happened. They're like, it's going to grow again, right?
Yeah. Nope.
Nah.
Signs had received positive reviews from film critics, and Rotten Tomatoes reports that 73% gave positive appraisals based on 233 reviews, with an average rating of 6.8 out of 10. So
interesting. So 73%, which is pretty good, but then 6.8 is actually really good for
Rotten Tomatoes.
For Rotten Tomatoes, that's actually really good. So wow. So the people who liked it really fucking liked it.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I mean, you know. That makes sense, I guess. Yeah. Kind of. The site's critical consensus reads, with Signs, Shyamalan proves once again an expert at building suspense and giving audiences the chills.
I gotta tell you, that fucking Brazilian scene, man, it works.
Pretty iconic. Mm-hmm. Roger Ebert, our man, gave the film 4 stars, writing, M. Night Shyamalan's Signs is the work of a born filmmaker, able to summon apprehension out of thin air. When it is over, we think not, we think not how little has been decided, but how much has been experienced. At the end of the film, I had to smile, recognizing how Shyamalan has essentially ditched a payoff. He knows, as we all sense, that payoffs have grown boring.
Okay, so personal history now. I remember this review.
Really?
No, I honestly, because I had always watched Roger Ebert, but around 2002 is when I started using the internet more. And I discovered RogerEbert.com, and it was...
I read his review on RogerEbert.com.
You did?
On his website,
I read that when it published itself in 2002, because I loved At the Movies, and so I went on to... And I would check it every week for every new movies that comes out, and Signs was definitely on there, because I remember him giving it 4 stars, and I freaked the fuck out. Wow. I've read that sentence before. That's amazing. That actually got me to want to watch the movie.
That's really... Aww.
I miss Roger Ebert. He was the man. He was the fucking man. Anyways.
I'm really bummed that I didn't even, like, get into him until, like, I started this podcast.
No. Yeah, it happens.
But it's one of those things that I'm really grateful about this podcast, because it's gotten me so much more into film than I ever really thought that I was ever going to be.
Right.
Because I always thought myself more as just, like, I like movies, but, like, never really getting into, like, film, like... Mm-hmm. territory.
Exactly, the hyper-detailed kind
of
thing. Yeah.
And now I find myself getting excited about production notes Thanks, Anthony.
Yep, that's me. and our listeners, you know, I'm sure you love it too. It's okay.
Nell Minow of Common Sense Media gave the film 4 out of 5 stars. She highly praised the casting and Shyamalan's direction, saying his, quote, only flaw was not leaving anything to the audience's imagination, unquote.
I agree, though.
Really?
Too much CG on the alien at the end.
At the very end, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Everything else until that point, perfect.
I liked the scene where it was shot through, like, through the reflection of the TV.
That, yeah, see, that would have been good, better for me, just to leave it in at that.
I thought, but if they had done it too much, I think that would have been...
You're right, audience weren't something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, I don't know. But Mike LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle gave the film 1 star out of 4, thinking that the film had, quote, few thoughts and no thrills.
LaSalle can suck a lick dick, all right? Leave that pause in there.
Variety's Todd McCarthy criticized the film for its lack of originality, writing, quote, after the overwrought Unbreakable and now the meager Signs, it's fair to speculate whether Shyamalan's persistence in replicating the otherworldly formula of The Sixth Sense might not be a futile and self-defeating exercise.
Oh, he saw the writing on the wall early.
Yeah.
Man, I used to actually read Todd McCarthy's reviews as well back in the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can see this as, like, definitely a valid criticism, but I still really like Signs, and no, I'm going to disagree purely on principle.
Yeah, yeah. And The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. Okay, you can like flawed movies. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I've never seen Unbreakable, and then when I learned that fucking Unbreakable and Split and Glass all take part in the same fucking universe, I was like, really, guys?
Yeah, I still haven't seen Glass, but I like Split. Split was good.
It's problematic. But anyway, in 2004, the film was listed at number 77 on Bravo's The 100 Scariest Movie Moments for the Brazilian birthday party scene.
All right.
It should have been higher, but I'll leave it at that.
Number 77, fine.
And with that, we have reached the notes on Signs. So now we can finally delve into some discussion about the movie. I'm so excited.
Yeah, so you guys have probably had a little bit of a gist of how we feel about the film based off our enthusiasm up until this point, but...
And the fact that we chose to cover it.
As the alien movie to launch Aliens versus Zombies fucking month. So, Alex Webster, what'd you think?
Oh, I love this movie.
Bring us into your childhood. Hit us up with all the goodness.
So, let's see here. Okay. So, my experience with this film. This is one of my first alien films as a kid. When I was watching it, it was actually very, like, it brought me back.
Yeah.
Because as I was watching it, I was telling DJ, like, as the birthday party scene was coming up, and I'm like, I was talking to DJ, and I'm like, okay, imagine this. You're 7 years old. It's 11 o'clock at night. You're going into your dad's room. Mm-hmm. This is playing on the TV. You ask, hey, what are you watching? And he's like, an alien movie. You ask, can you watch? He says, yes. He sits you on the bed and lets you watch.
Oh,
this
shit.
Is the scene that comes on. Now imagine going to bed pretty much immediately after.
Wow, that was your introduction to Signs.
Yeah, the scene. Like, that was the scene.
That is the scene,
that
I will
is
say.
The scene. Yeah. And, like, so it was just, like, such, like, and it was so, like, it was such, like an imprint on my brain.
You know, it's kind of a good, that shows how good the scene is because it was impactful to both of us in completely different ways. In completely different contexts. But it's still hyper impactful.
Super. And for me, growing up also, I just grew up in a super, super nerdy family.
Mm-hmm.
And so aliens and sort of like extraterrestrials and alien movies and just sort of all of those kinds of things were very, like, present in my childhood. So it was always something that I was fascinated in and something that scared the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
I think I told you this story when we were very drunk in San Diego. But when... like, spotlights.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a time when I was really, really young. Outside, there were spotlights.
Oh, I vaguely remember this drunken story.
Yeah. There were spotlights in the sky. And
was this at the rooftop bar?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
I was very, very little. And I asked my dad. I was like, what are those? And my dad convinced me they were aliens.
Yep, I remember.
Or, as I called them when I was very little, I couldn't pronounce my N's. Mm-hmm. So they were aliens.
Aliens? Oh, my God.
They were aliens?
Take two aliens, you know, and just take a nap and you'll be fine.
and so... he convinced me that they were aliens.
Wow.
And it scared the shit out of me. And then it took, like, I don't know, for me it felt like hours, but of course it was probably only a couple of minutes before he was like, they're just lights. They're not aliens. So to this day, I cannot look at spotlights in the sky without being
like... Just flinch a little bit, like, oh, is this the one?
Is this the fucking one?
I fucking told you guys. I told you.
I know, I'm gonna be the one fucking crazy person from, like, Independence Day who's just like, they're fucking aliens!
Like, no, they're opening a car wash. Bull fucking shit.
But yeah, so, I mean, aliens have always been very... And alien films, like, one of my other favorite films has been Contact.
Oh, I haven't... I saw that once when I was way young.
I've seen... Way I had young. It on DVD. Oh, I also shit. Had... I also had signed on DVD.
Nice.
So, like, most alien films, like, without warning, had it on VHS. On VHS, I think. So, like, a lot of alien movies I had ready access to.
Another side where we're talking about alien VHSs here. My copy of Independence Day came with a 1980s UFO VHS on if UFOs are real or not, as just they gave it to you when we bought it.
Oh my god.
It wasn't even a Fox promotion. It was whoever the store we got it from was like, and by the way, you can take this also.
It's like getting a fucking pre-roll or something. Yeah. Like, just here you go.
Yeah, it is.
When you buy your weed. Yeah. Like, it's like getting, like, a couple of pre-rolls when you buy your weed. Like, just here you go.
Here you go. Yeah. No, dude, it was a lot
we
like
that. We found
these
in the back.
Yeah.
Here you go.
You might like it as much. You might not. Who the fuck knows? but I watched that shit all the time. And it was literally, like an hour long. And it had camcorder footage of aliens. Or alien, saucers and shit.
Yeah. Any kind of documentaries. Anything on, like, Discovery Channel. Kids, anything I could get my hands on that was UFO related, I ate that shit up. Like, it was so like influential to, like, me now. Like, the reason that I am the way that I am today is because, like,
obsession with the extraterrestrial.
Yeah, totally. But it still scares me.
Yeah.
Like, I remember having panic attacks as I was a kid because I was afraid I was going to get abducted by aliens.
It was frightening. No. In fact, I will say when YouTube first started popping off, one of the first things I got really obsessed with was finding alien videos and being like, is there more? What's going on?
The truth is out there. Yeah. Like, I, you know, like, so it's, this movie was one of those films that, like, it was scary, but, like, just scary enough, but, like, not so scary that, like, it gave me nightmares for a
week. Yeah, that you can't watch it repeatedly. Yeah.
So this was one of my, like, homesick movies. Like, anytime I was homesick, it was time to watch Signs.
Dude, with that Hitchcockian score and direction, man, you were getting some sophisticated filmmaking thrown at you
right
there.
You know, it's funny. It was this film and probably, like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, okay.
Like, so, and
John Hughes, too.
Yeah.
Damn.
Like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off was always also one of my homesick movies.
That's a good homesick movie. Yeah. I still have a Save Ferris shirt around here somewhere. That was my laundry shirt.
So, but what about you?
I haven't actually seen this film in many years, but I noticed that when I watched it again, I knew every scene. I knew every fuck, because I used to watch it a lot.
Me too.
Because I loved it. I always loved it as a alien film.
It's so weird, right? At what point did we just, like, decide it was time to stop watching it?
Yeah, you know? I don't know either, because, like, the thing is, I mean, I think it's good. I think it's really, really well filmed. Like, really well filmed, actually. The direction is very Hitchcockian.
I think I stopped watching it in, like, 2005.
Somewhere. I don't know what it was. That definitely wasn't, I probably went until, like, maybe, like, 2011, but that was still, like, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been almost
a decade.
It's
been a little bit.
Yeah. But I've always, I guess, up until that point, I watched it pretty obsessively. I always loved it as a movie. I would say the writing's not generally as strong as I remember it, but, like, that's more of a story issue than it is, like, the film itself. Like, I think it's just well made. And watching it again, I knew every scene. I was very nostalgic for it, but I still wasn't blinded by it, and I felt like, now that I have more of a filmic lens than I did back then, I was much more able to appreciate how just insanely well-directed this film is and how well-acted it is. These performances are fucking fantastic across the board.
So you kind of answered it, but I'm going to ask again. So this was a rewatch for the first time in many years for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So did it live up to your expectations, or what did you miss the last time around, if anything, about this film?
Oh, good question. There was one scene that I missed. I can't remember it right now. But I remember there was one. It was before he, Meryl talks about his, it's when he's talking to the recruiter. I always remember him talking, the guy talking yeah. shit about him. And yeah. like, hey, yeah, he also has like three the other strikeout. Records or yeah, whatever. The strikeout, yeah.
yeah.
But I didn't remember the recruitment scene before when he's actually talking to a recruiter who actually gives them the lowdown. I'm like, oh yeah, these are military tactics and things like that. I was like, oh shit. This is yeah. new.
No, I remember that one because the way he talked was just like, I'm like, you're an alien.
He talked like a David Lynch character, yeah. dude. Like, out of everyone. Yeah,
it were very, like, Twin Peaks, for mm-hmm. sure.
Well, see, that's the thing. This film nails small town so well because everybody has names. People who aren't on screen have names and reference.
Yeah, or like when Mel Gibson's character is just like, I want none of you to hang out with Tracy Abernathy.
Yeah.
Like, literally first, last name. Exactly. Like, even though she's only on screen for, like, 10 seconds mm-hmm. max, like she, like he is just like, this person has a first name and a last name and you all know who I'm talking about.
It's her, that they do that because it's a small town, so it's her name and then the lineage she fucking comes from. Watch out for those motherfuckers.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, this movie exceeded what I thought. I didn't know if I was gonna like it again or not. Like, yeah. I really didn't know. But watching it again, I will probably watch it again a lot sooner. Because I genuinely enjoy it. Again, I could be blinded by nostalgia.
It's also on HBO, which I didn't know.
It's on HBO, exactly. But honestly, like, the filmmaking and performances all combine to make something that I just appreciate for the craftsmanship even alone.
Yeah.
And lots of individual scenes, especially of the aliens, build in a way that most films don't know how to do anymore. They just don't. They give you everything in the kitchen sink and signs is, like, withholding. Uh-huh. Until it needs to stop. Yeah. And then, I mean, then you get 2002 CG, which yeah. is okay. But, I mean, it still effectively delivers payoff, which yeah. is nice. How about you? How did that work out for you?
Well, it was an experience. Like I said, this is such, like, a deeply nostalgic film for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't expecting it to be as emotional of a film as mm-hmm. it was, because, like, I knew everything that had happened. I knew the wife had died tragically. I mm-hmm. knew that, you know, like, I knew there, you know, that...
There's, like, a somber vibe to
there's
it,
a,
you know?
It's a yeah. very sad movie, and I knew that there were religious undertones. I think the biggest thing that surprised me was how religious it was.
Yeah, pretty... almost on the nosy religious sometimes. Yeah, especially, like, towards the end.
Towards the end, like, it was very, like, I was like... holy shit, this mm-hmm. is not a movie about aliens, this is a movie about God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of, like, and aliens were, like, the vehicle.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
you
it's
know?
A movie about faith.
Yeah.
That's mostly, yeah.
Yeah, not so much about religion, because there's, I mean, they don't even really establish the kind of, like, pastor that he is.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's mostly about faith.
Exactly.
And, like, so, I think, like, I did not realize how based in that
mm-hmm.
the film was, and that kind of, like, took, like, kind of threw me for a loop, because I didn't remember that at all, because as a kid I was so focused on yeah. the fucking aliens that I didn't even, like, at that point I didn't even really care. Like, I'm like, okay, sure, this guy is, like, giving up on God, and
mm-hmm.
and at the, as a kid I was like, yeah, like, do you blame him? Like, you know,
because, yeah.
like, when, you know, like, as a kid, like, you kind of, like, empathize with whoever regardless mm-hmm. of their circumstances. And I was just like, yeah, he lost his wife, of course. Like, it kind of just made sense.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of, like, his journey back to, like, faith. And
or just,
kind of,
yeah, believing in something.
Yeah,
yeah,
and how his, like, kind of almost how, like, the alien invasion brought his family together.
Well, there's a very...
was very weird to
interesting
me.
Theory, actually, around that we're going to get into one of the other questions.
Oh, that you added?
Yeah, the one that I added. Well, I'll ask it in a little bit, but I do like the bringing back to the Mel Gibson character. One thing I remember specifically, seeing it now versus back then, that I was a big thought back then, but it came back to me as I was watching it, is just how far fallen from his faith he got in this film. Like,
oh, yeah.
Wake, when he's talking to Meryl on the couch, and he's like, there are two kinds of people, whatever, and he's like, you know, to comfort him, because he knows how to comfort, he's a reverend. But then when Meryl's like, I'm comforted, so whatever, like, you know, so what kind of person are you? And then mm-hmm. I remember younger me was religious back then. And then when Mel Gibson's character was just like,
It
doesn't matter. Yeah, what is
it? Like,
does it matter?
You're comforted. Like, he's like, mm-hmm. before he answers, he's like, are you comforted? And Meryl's just like, yeah. And he's like, then it doesn't matter what I believe.
Yeah, that was a very interesting lesson to learn. Because as a person who was defaultly religious, not necessarily, like, active in faith or whatever,
yeah.
but just by default, back then at least, it was something that was like, you didn't just do the cop-out answer. you literally were just like, what does it matter? And that's a good question to ask. And it's a question that you ask yourself that I did at this time, too, which is a very good because it introduced skepticism, which is always a good thing. And even though it turns around at the end, you know, it wraps itself up in a little bit of a bow.
I think it ties itself up in a very nice, very, like, picturesque bow at the end, for sure. It ties up all the loose ends, and I think it because the roller coaster-esque-ness of this story, you know, you're dealing with his faith, you're dealing with this, like, fractured relationship he has with his family.
Yep, that's right.
And, you know, you're talking about mourning, you're talking about grief, you're talking about, like, all of these things that are really hard to talk about normally. And I think using aliens as kind of, like, a vehicle for that is a very smart move on M. Night's part.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I mean, the only problem, I think, is he goes a little too on the nose for a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Which, there's like a part, like, the part when, like, he's, like, straight up, like, saying, like, I hate you in the basement. I'm like, oh my god, we get it.
Yeah, although I will say Mel Gibson does, he puts a lot of gravitas behind that voice when he does it, which is actually, I think, is pretty cool.
There's a lot of gravitas.
There's a lot of gravitas behind this, yeah. But again, like, I think being able to treat skepticism and also, like, any of that stuff, negatively addressing faith and not treating it as a given, especially in this time, because you're coming up, 90s were still generally pretty religious. I mean, going in, it really, really started becoming more cynical assholes when it came to, like, the 2010s, I feel like. So Shyamalan taking that on head on, I think, was actually pretty bold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so this is actually my question right here.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. I don't know this question, so please.
Have you heard of the demon theory regarding the aliens?
What? No. What?
No?
No, I've never heard this.
Okay, so...
Explain it to me.
All right, so, again, I'm not a religious man anymore, but the demon theory, I think, is a really cool aspect to the film that people have attributed to it, although I don't buy it 100%, but that the aliens are actually not invaders from space, but demons from hell, and that a lot of the characters are addressing their own internal demons, and until they can conquer them, they can't defeat the aliens, and the aliens are always getting a one-up until they do. And at the end, what actually takes them out are a lot of other religious influences, like them taking their leaps of faith and, like, also the water being holy water, actually, when the faith finally comes back to them, and the daughter kind of setting it up, like, it all, you know, it all ties together anyways at the end.
Yeah.
But that aliens themselves were more manifestations of that than anything else.
Interesting. I mean, I don't think that was the intention.
No, I don't. I think they're stretching.
I think it's an interesting read, and I'm always for reading against the grain. Always. I think it's such a fun thought exercise for films.
Right.
I used to do that purposely. Like, it made me a little bit of an asshole in classes, but, like, I would do it all the time because I just
fucking Webster.
I did it all the time because I took a lot of, like, feminist film theory classes, or, like, one of my film classes, and my teacher fucking loved me for it. Because every paper I wrote, I was just like, this is how I interpret it. And she's just like, this is very against the grain. Do you know that? I was like, no, this is just how I interpreted it.
See, if you throw aliens as demons within the context of the film and look at it through that lens, a lot of the other stuff that happens around it apparently opens the film up a little more to a different interpretation.
I think that's cool, though. I think that's a cool thought exercise. Next time I watch it, I'm gonna try that.
You should. Because I learned about it recently.
I'll have to check it out, and I'll let you know how I interpret it.
If it actually works.
One of the things that I thought was kind of left open was how the wife was psychic.
Yeah, okay, see...
There's, like, the psychic subplot where, like, the daughter and the wife were both psychic.
There's some Pascal shit going on.
Yeah!
I was thinking that. That was the only weak part that actually...
Yeah, that, like bugged.
That bugged me watching it lately.
Like, the wife is psychic, and then the daughter is psychic, and that's why she's setting up the water glasses. And I think...
And then she's I don't want you to die, Bo.
Yeah, and I believe... Or no, Morgan.
Morgan. She's Bo, right.
Yeah, I believe that there's, like, a deleted scene or there's something, because I did have the DVD. So I did watch all the special features, and I did watch all of the deleted scenes.
Oh, my God. Research!
And when I was younger. And I believe there was something about, like, after, like, past the... like, the final scene where you see him, like, being a man of the cloth once more, where she stops with the water stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, after the aliens, like, okay. She stops, where I'm just like, okay, so you're definitely psychic, right? Yeah, like, that's just not outwardly addressed.
I'm glad they cut that out, actually. That would have been a little too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that did throw me off a lot, though. Like, she literally called out a plot point, and I'm like, no, you can't make it that direct. That's the part where I'm like, direction, musical score, acting, amazing. Writing can sometimes suck a little bit. In the movie, just a little bit.
Okay, Shyamalan needs to bring on, like, a supplementary, like, writer.
He does. I mean, this is back when he was hot shit, though. They used to lock his scripts up
and
send them across. That's
totally fine. Yeah. I just think that they're, like, one of the weak points where, like, someone could have just been like,
hokey.
Why are they psychic?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where did that come from? Like, I thought they were religious. Like, isn't that, like, sacrilegious? Like, isn't that literally the definition? Like,
no, that's true. He actually could have used one once over from someone else, I think. It would have made the film a little sharper.
I think so. Like, you know, trust your editors, people.
Trust your editors,
But I think that was the only thing that I kind of felt confused about, and I would have liked some maybe a little bit more, like, if not a immediately or like an immediate like answer to something that would have given me some kind of closure.
Something, yeah, no,
because I mean, it none of it made sense until, like, of course you see the scene where the wife and like she's giving him advice, but it's like technically advice for
everyone
for that exact moment when the aliens invade. So technically she's dying and she's like, I know these aliens. Why doesn't she just say, hey, at this time aliens are gonna invade? Well, here's what you need to know.
She's not in exactly a position to piece together coherent thought, I would imagine.
Hey, she was all there.
Yeah,
she was pretty coherent.
She was like halfway there.
But anyway, according to M. Night Shyamalan, going off of the religious tangent, the movie title has two meanings. Quote, one is the crop signs, of course.
Yeah.
But it is also about faith and the existence of signs from above, unquote. He also says that the scariest part about his movie is how, quote, a good man can lose his faith in God. Thoughts?
This is the Shyamalan being on the nose again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is a little this is one of his little fluffy.
Like, oh, I'm so smart. Like,
yeah, means can mean two things, guys.
Well, and it's so funny because, like, in the in one of the articles I was reading, like the almost names for the film were just like totally alien based.
Really?
Yeah, they were like totally not. Misconstrued 100%. Aliens are here to fuck your shit.
Crop circle invasion.
Yeah, basically. So I just think it's very like hindsight, like, of course I did this intentionally. And also the scene with Meryl and Graham on the couch where he's just like talking about coincidences and signs. Yeah. And of course, and anytime and in a movie,
look for the signs,
of course, anytime in a movie where someone says the title of the movie, I'm just like, please stop. It's very cheesy for me. It's one of those things.
It always is, yeah.
It's one of those things where I just like, I deadpan and I look in like a distant, like, I look into the distance and I'm just like, they just.
And they're always there's always a little camera flare that's just like,
Like, there's a little, like there's a 2-second pause where they're just like, they wait for you to just like get it and then nudge the person next to you like,
I bet if it was even quieter, you'd hear a mic drop, huh? No, which, I mean, fuck.
I don't like the scariest part is how a good man can lose his faith in God. Like, the scariest part is the aliens, dude.
This seems like a press, like, statement that he's just like, I'm out plugging this bitch. Uh-huh. So just so you know, brilliant. Sign me for next movie. Like, that's what this statement
kind of feels
like. And
then he did The Village.
And he did The Village. He's like, yeah, you know what? What the real thing is The Village itself is actually, and then just...
Yeah. Pound the nerd.
Anyways, so what? Okay, obviously I may know the answer to this, but if we both agree, then we can do the second one. But what scene or moment stood out to you the most in this movie, and what made it so sad, scary, effective, etc.? Which scene was it?
Obviously the Brazilian.
Brazilian, yeah.
Like, that's like, that's the one that stands out the most to me.
Okay, what's your silver medal scene?
My the dinner scene.
Yeah. Okay, that's my silver medal scene too. That's mine.
That scene always, even as a kid, I was just like, oh God, this is really It really, like, tugs on the heartstrings.
That brought the theater down. Yeah. Everyone was just like, everyone was heartbroken.
And again, I just don't like seeing Mel Gibson yell now because now I know he's a dick.
Yeah, but then when he's just like, when he really raises his voice to like assert his authority, because in the whole film, he's kind of getting stepped on.
Yeah, like, he's kind of just like letting it go because again, he's a man in mourning. He's kind of just like, he doesn't know how to be a parent, like how to be both parents to his kids.
Or even just one fucking parent at this point. He really can't.
He doesn't know how to be a single parent. Mm-mm. And like that's, and I think that's what he's struggling with. And it's still him, because like how hard is that to have to cope with like the loss of your partner and then also have to take care of your children who are also coping with the loss of their parent.
Yeah, and he's not doing it well, and his people are starting to resent him, and his only grasp at control, like, he grasps at it to try to get them to go to the lake, and everybody outvotes him, so his authority's already stripped right
like,
there.
Like, he's just like, fine, fuck it, whatever.
And then, and this is, like, his last fucking, like, I'm not, like, if there's one thing that you guys aren't gonna step on me for, it's gonna be my current lack of faith in fucking anything, because I will not waste time on this shit.
Yeah.
And that catalyst of shitstorm that it brings across the family, that's so effective, because it's effective without the aliens. It's the personal conflict that's been happening this whole time.
Yeah. So I think those scenes are really effective.
I will also say, actually, the scene that followed up right after with the aliens, and when he finally tells Morgan about, like, his birth.
Yeah.
I remember, what was it?
Oh, those are actually the stories of Shyamalan's kids.
Oh,
and
is
how
it?
They were born.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's why they're so effective. I honestly, like, in
That actually, again, funny enough, first time I, or the first, like, first dozen times I watched it as a kid, like, I was just like, yes, we get it. And now, like, as an adult, I'm just like, I'm like getting all weepy, trying to hold my shit together.
Oh, well, I remember watching it in theaters and thinking, I know he told Bo the story earlier, and I was like, okay, cool, like, whatever story, but what about Morgan's? What about Morgan's? And then the dinner scene happens, and they go through the whole thing, and then he finally tells Morgan's story, and it's very sad, and I'm just like, I was so into it in the theaters, and I was just like, oh, they actually delivered on that one.
Well, again, I guess now is probably a good time as any to, why I relate to Morgan, because growing up, everyone kind of, like, wanted me to relate to Bo, because I was growing up, I was smack dab between them in age range, but I was, like, personality-wise, like, I related to Morgan on such, like, a molecular level. It was really, like, I was just, like, we are the same person.
Yeah.
Like, we both had the weird obsession with aliens. I was kind of, like, kind of that same, like, headstrong mentality. Mm-hmm. I also had asthma.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Okay. So watching this movie had an extra layer of scariness to me as a child because I was severely asthmatic.
Damn.
And there was a point when I was around 10, I think.
Mm-hmm.
10 or 11. Yeah, I was at, like, between 10 or 12, maybe, somewhere around there, where I had a cold and then I got an asthma attack. And I had never in my life thought more that I was going to die. Because I was laying on the couch thinking, I'm going to stop breathing.
Oh,
and it was the scariest shit.
That's so freaky.
Yeah. And so, those scenes where he's having an asthma attack freak me the fuck out.
Dude, that freaked me out, too.
Yeah, because, like...
I mean, I have regular lungs.
But, yeah, so, like, being asthmatic and, like, so, like, that also. And then also I have a younger brother. So, like, wanting to, like, take care of, like, I also was, like, super, super protective over my younger brother. I still am very protective over my younger brother. Like, very protective.
Yeah.
And even though he's, like, so much taller than me now, it's really annoying.
Watch out for those ladies.
No, not even that. It's just, like, he's just very tall, and I am no longer the tallest, which I was for a very long time.
Yeah, I was never the tallest. I was the oldest, too.
Well, I'm the oldest, so. Yeah. But I think it was just, like, very interesting, like, kind of, like, wanting people, like, kind of, like, the expectations of me wanting to relate to Bo, because technically I was closer to her in age.
More fits that role.
At that time, but, like, I was just, like, very much, like, I read all the stuff that Morgan was reading.
Mm-hmm.
I had asthma, so that was, like, something that I related to. He was a very protective older sibling, and that was something I related to, so, like, I think that's part of the reason that also really, really drove me to wanting to watch that movie so many times as a kid, yeah. Because like it was a very relatable character.
It's almost
me.
A catharsis sometimes.
Yeah, it was a very cathartic experience because you got to see someone who like looked like you or like had you know, you saw yourself very visibly reflected.
I always had that feeling anytime I saw any brown person on film, because that shit was hard.
Yeah,
that was the one where I was just like. They have black hair and brown skin. Oh my god!
Yeah.
But when it comes to the kids, also I totally like fucking loved Morgan a lot as a kid. I thought the alien, all that stuff too. But I was also much older, so
yeah.
So didn't get to relate as much to them.
Yeah. But I mean, Morgan was like older than me at that point, I think. But yeah, watching it was just like it was real, and I didn't realize that. I didn't make this connection until I. Watched it this time around because I was just like, oh, that's why I loved Morgan so much.
Well, see, I actually have read in the past in some article, like some study or whatever it was, that a lot of people in their youth always try to empathize with characters that are older because you want to grow up.
Yeah.
So you always put your traits onto something that you can aspire to be, as opposed to ones that are just directly in your age range because you really don't know then. They're just kind of like you. But
that makes me feel a lot better about always projecting myself onto older characters.
Yep, that's actually a very common thing.
Okay, yeah. Because I was also thinking about that. Like, I remember being in, like, elementary school or like middle school and like projecting onto like high school, like
me with middle school and That 70s Show, and they were in high school.
Yeah,
I projected a lot on like Eric Foreman,
yeah,
and like those style characters, you
I
know?
Always projected, and I just remember thinking like just wanting, like I remember like always just wanting to be in high school and thinking how cool it was gonna be.
Yeah.
And then I got to high school and it was fucking shit.
Fucking horrible.
It was shit.
Can't Hardly Wait was another one, or Ethan Embry's character. Empathize. Yeah, little me in fucking grade school and middle school was just like, I'm going to be that piece of shit one day.
Yeah.
Anyways, though, would you want to see this universe or a remake of this film in the next 5 to 10 years?
No.
Nah, let it be standalone.
No, I don't. I think it did what it needed to do in the time that it was made. I think I'm okay. Because also, this is like in the early 2000s, and then going on with our timeline of alien invasion films, this is within, so what, this is like 4-6 years after like Independence Day.
Yeah, and then War of the Worlds is still after this.
So we're still kind of like in that renaissance of alien invasion films.
True, and it's a couple years after Men in Black also.
And also we have Men in Black. Men in Black 2 comes out a couple of years after this.
Yeah.
So I think we're in a good era of alien films at that point. Because right now we don't really have any really good alien films.
Yeah. But I also don't... I think a universe would cheapen it because this movie's based... It's mostly about its themes.
Yeah.
And if you remove that element of it, you can try to do a universe, then the aliens are just fucking humanoid-looking aliens.
Yeah, the aliens weren't particularly... There was nothing particularly special about them. Mm-hmm. Like, they did what they needed to do, and they were scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Night Shyamalan did his job with that. Because he also, I think, focused far more on the characters than... And, like, the... Yeah, kind of like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, than the extraterrestrials.
Than the extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think... Yeah, that's... I think it's fine as is.
I agree.
Okay, so far we've looked at two pretty unconventional picks for our aliens versus zombies.
Definitely.
Theme this month. So what are your thoughts so far for this month's question, zombies versus aliens? Or aliens?
Well, it's funny, just now I actually literally a second ago had to stop because of how our discussions have gone for both. Like, we've watched two films that have had time to use lessons from the genre and tell personal stories.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, so when the zombies or aliens, like what kind of stories do they allow to be told? And with Shaun of the Dead, we had something that was more about personal growth and everyone else kind of being a zombie in their own lives and like how to get out of that, become your own person that can handle that. Where this is more about belief. And
faith.
Well, and then
personal growth in the like mourning.
And exactly, how do we handle tragedy as it happens immediately, and what it does to the rest of your life? So, zombies or aliens? I still think we have two other movies we gotta
I was thinking about that too, because even when I wrote that question, I was just like, what would be my answer right now? And right now I'm pretty neck and neck.
Yeah, because honestly, like, they both provided really good bases for themes that could be addressed.
These were, I don't want to say our trash picks, but these were like our fun picks. Yeah. These were our
Unconventional.
Kind of off the cuff. Nostalgia picks. Nostalgic. Yeah. Kind of. And then the next two, we have like award winning, like classic.
And then
like,
fucking iconic ass motherfucking. Iconic,
genre defining, like good shit planned for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, something with a lot more very comprehensive history, at least for one of them. Which you guys are definitely going to love.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Anthony's very excited.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but yeah, I think. For Signs, I was very happy that we got to watch it, because I don't think I would have rewatched it if this podcast did not give me an excuse to rewatch it. I don't think I would have.
Yeah,
because I was genuinely very worried that this movie
wouldn't hold up. No, we talked about this.
We talked about it. I was very worried that it wasn't going to hold up, and it surprisingly did. Other than like the brief overshadows of like religious overtones.
Yeah, and
like,
the on-the-nose kind of writing.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, it pretty much held up exactly as how I remembered, which is really cool.
It's kind of weird because, like, this and Shaun of the Dead, they're both very distinctly different movies.
Very.
But they both serve, like...
A similar?
They both have their own strengths that the other one doesn't quite have.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of strange because, like, the level of grounded... ...ness in Signs is what propels the film.
Yeah.
Like, the outlandishness is just kind of hinted at for the longest time.
But then the outlandishness in Shaun of the Dead...
Is the movie.
But then also, the personal growth that's hinted at, and, like, it's the, you know, kind of taking yourself a little bit more seriously in Shaun of the Dead versus in Signs, it's taking yourself a little bit less seriously.
Exactly,
so
yes.
They kind of complement each other in a weird way.
Kind of well. I think we unintentionally picked some pretty profound picks for our first two. Like, not on purpose at all, guys. We did not expect to have these deep-ass discussions. We're like, oh, okay, I guess we'll do some history and then, like, see how the movies
will
play out.
They'll be short episodes. Yeah, they'll be fun.
And they end up being just like, oh, my gosh. Like, and then in my heart.
And then we're talking about, you know, projection and, like, our own psychological, like, issues. Right?
That's the power of film, though. Particularly even horror films such as these both can still provoke deep-ass thought. Because horror is not a bullshit genre, as the Academy head would have you believe. Aside from Silence of the Lambs, of course, and The Exorcist, which we've covered in past episodes.
Thank you, Anthony.
That took some breath out of me. All right.
It did. Is there anything else you wanted to add, or are we good?
I would just say, if you guys have never seen Signs before, sorry for spoiling everything.
Oh, yeah.
But you should totally actually watch this film.
It came out 17 years ago. Yeah, Get over it.
Remove your Shyamalan bias if you're like a hardcore atheist. Totally respect it. Totally fine.
You can watch
this
movie.
You can still like it as an alien movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If, like, I am a very not religious person.
Exactly. Not offended.
And, like, it's, like, a little, like, cheesy, but, like, I can, it's still tolerable.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, like, heavy on the cheese, but not, like, you know, inedible.
You're not watching Ten Commandments.
It's not, no.
You're not watching Ten Commandments at all. Nah, no.
Unless you're, like, a very easily offended atheist.
Then you're like, is that a cross over there?
Yeah. Then it's just like, all right, whatever. This was 2002's Signs, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. A couple of housekeeping notes. We are still accepting questions for our roundtable episode for the end of the month. Mm-hmm. So if you have a question that you want to ask us, you can hit us up on social media, and you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE. People's Podcast. And then you can also hit us up on Twitter. That is at Horror People Pod.
Mm-hmm.
If you also want to email us, if you want, we don't really check it, but if that's easier for you than finding us,
if you want to sponsor the show, it's fine. You know, it's cool, whatever.
If you also want to find, you know, hit us up there, and that's easier for you than social media, you can email us at horriblepeoplespodcast.
At gmail.com. Not just to type that in and see where it goes.
At gmail.com. And then if you want to find Anthony on social media, you can find him at Hyrulean Hustler on Twitter and Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then you can find me at Ghost Coffee Shop on Twitter and Instagram as well.
Yes.
And then...
next week we're going zombies.
Next week we're going back to zombies. I'm very excited. It is a foreign horror film.
Yep, you ain't gonna pick. Ooh, yeah, you're not getting the conventional one either.
It's not conventional, but it is very groundbreaking and very. Again, I'm going with the emotional, so it's good. It's a good time. I think it'll be fun. I'm very excited.
And then after that, aliens.
We're wrapping up with aliens, and then. Our final episode for the season. So we're going to keep mentioning it. We didn't mention it at the beginning, but we'll mention it now as we finish up the episode. The last episode, the 31st of July.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 31st of July, which is a Wednesday, we will be having our kind of mailbag episode and a little mini round table with some of our friends and past guest hosts.
Past guest hosts, that's right.
Will be joining us and we'll have a fun-filled discussion. We already have some stuff planned out and it's going to be great.
Yes.
But that will be our last episode. Dun, dun, dun. Just kidding.
No.
No. That will be our last episode for season one. And then we will be back in September for a whole new season as we get ready for Halloween.
And honestly, like, what we have planned, we need that time to write, guys. These are fucking huge.
Yeah, we have some huge stuff planned.
Too big, I feel, almost. But whatever, we committed to this.
We committed. We wrote it down in our little doc. We can't erase
it
now.
I mean, we can't. Yeah, no, we can't.
It's etched in stone.
Yeah.
So we will be taking a break for the month of August. Don't worry, we'll still be active on social media. You'll still be able to get a hold of us. And we'll still be around. You might even see a Minnesota round. We don't know for sure yet.
We don't know yet. We'll see.
It just depends. Don't want to promise anything, but we'll still be around for sure. I think that's just about it.
That's it. All right, guys. Well, y'all heard the social media, so I don't know. Continue on your lives. Get the fuck out of here.
Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
That's more... encouraging, yes.
Jesus Christ.
At the worst. God. I gotta stop patronizing our fans.
Really do. But please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you like what you heard. It means the world to us, and it really encourages us to keep going. The amount of love we've received over this past almost a year, we've been doing this for a while, and it's been really, really amazing.
Honestly, love
and
it. Yeah.
Just even thinking back to when we first started back with Psycho back in October of last year, I cannot believe it, we've come so far.
Seriously.
So thank you everyone for joining us. Please check us out on all of the things we mentioned before, and then stay tuned for next week, and until then, have a great week, and we'll see you then.
Peace out, motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.
Bye.